Hello and welcome to the October Pals Anime Lounge, a podcast where a bunch of haunted pals get together to talk about spooky anime. The pals are Vampiric Artura.
Hello, everyone.
And Goblin Gauze.
Hi.
Wait a minute.
It's scarier if it's just normal.
If it's just Gauze, that's a good point.
And I am your host, Ghoulish Ace. In today's episode, we're talking about Persona 3, the movie 3, Falling Down.
The stairs.
Released in 2015. We watched the second movie last October, so it's past time that we find out what happened next. It was produced by A1 Pictures, the studio behind Persona 5 the animation, Persona 4 the animation, and what appears to be every season of Sword Art Online. Persona 3, the movie 3, Falling Down, currently has an Annie List score of 74%. This is based on the RPG game Persona 3, developed by Atlus, though not sure which exact version, because there's been a number of them.
That explains why this is the third movie we're watching of Persona 3. Does that make it Persona 6?
I have to do the math.
My short synopsis for this is, after experiencing last in, first out, with the loss of a team member, the SEES team prepares for the class trip. Artura, what do you have?
After completing their quest to close out the Dark Hour, the SEES group finds out they've been terribly misled.
And goes.
Our heroes defeat the 12 shadows and put an end to the Dark Hour. Or do they? Our friend turns out to be our enemy? Should we try to get close to other people if we may end up alone anyway?
Sorry, that just sounded like a light novel title.
Yep. It probably is, to be honest. It will be the remake of Persona 3.
Right, well, if you didn't listen to the previous episode, I mean, if you didn't listen to the first movie podcast or the second movie podcast, then you might want to go back and listen to those. But previously, Aragaki died, Amada cried, and someone with a big scarf arrived.
Oh my god, spoilers!
We start in media res as the SEES team fight on a bridge, and Makoto is knocked out. He wakes in the Velvet Room and talks with Pharos, aka the little prisoner.
The child cum burglar.
I say talks, but Pharos just monologues at him about how short life is.
Classic cum burglar.
We then cut back to the others who are fighting with Strega, the evil SEES. Junpei is tied up and begs Chidori not to release her persona. We don't find out how Junpei got tied up, by the way.
He's just into that.
I mean, the last
I was episode, about to make the same joke.
The last movie ended with them at a funeral, so.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that that there was a decent time skip between the first and second film also.
Oh, I do.
Not only that, do you really think Junpei's above getting tied up in a funeral?
He just goes everywhere. He starts tied up.
Makoto wakes and the SEES win. In Makoto's head, Pharos thanks him for being a friend, but Pharos has to leave, so he does. Then we get the title card.
Cue the Golden Girls theme song. Thank you for being a friend.
The date is 4th of November 2009, a month since the end of the last movie. Mitsuru and Junpei are at the hospital with Chidori, having returned her there, while the other Strega members fled. The others are just doing stuff. Later at the dorm, Mitsuru's dad collects the evokers from everyone and packs them away. They've defeated all of the 12 shadows, so at midnight they will be relieved of their duties. Afterwards, they have a party to celebrate. Makoto nopes out and heads for his room, but is pursued by Aegis. She confirms that she will remain online after tonight, but is returning to the lab for a tune-up. Everyone else waits for midnight, and to their surprise, the Dark Hour occurs. It wasn't supposed to happen after the 12 shadows were defeated. Church bells start ringing, and they follow the sound to Tartarus, where Ikitsuki is waiting to greet them. He announces that the bells signal the coming of the fall. It's November, autumn's already happening, dude. He explains that even though he told them that defeating the 12 would end Tartarus and the Dark Hour, In fact, the opposite would happen. The opposite being that the Dark Hour in Tartarus would start.
Wait a now, minute, it's a timey-wimey thing again.
Now it's the dark 2 hours.
And double Tartarus.
The dark 60 minutes? The sequel, Electric Bungaloo.
Now it happens at 12 noon as well as 12 midnight.
Oh, no. No, that's awful.
Now it's dark 30 minutes, but it's 4 times a day.
He explains that death will arrive and bring the apocalypse. Sorry, the fall. And by the way, Aegis is holding Mitsuri's dad hostage. There's some kind of time skip and everyone's on the roof being crucified.
2 weeks in a row, huh?
Aegis glitches or something and Mr. Kirijiro escapes her grasp, pulling a gun from Sok and aiming at Ikutsuki, who pulls a gun on him too. They both get shot, and Aegis takes aim at the SEES, but at the last moment frees them from their bonds.
I half expected everyone to start pulling out guns and like extra arms coming off screen and pulling out guns.
Yes, it's that Spider-Man meme, but they're all holding guns at each other.
I think that might be a naked gun gag, but I'm not sure.
Ikutsuki monologues and then falls off the roof. So we cut to the dorm where Makoto is hallucinating Pharos before he leaves and goes for a walk. He's interrupted from his brooding by the scarf guy who wants a chat. Makoto isn't having it, so walks off and Scarf-kun disappears, just as Aegis turns up, glitching. She says that she had a bad feeling, so wants to accompany him wherever he's going, even though she severely needs repairs. We cut to the Velvet Room, where Igor is talking about Makoto going through puberty, or something. He says, you've gone through changes, and like, yeah, he's a teenager. Igor shows him a contract, which says he agrees to the statement, time never waits. We then skip ahead to 6th of November, 2009.
He just took a bunch of random Confucius quotes and faked his signature underneath.
Time never waits, that's why we skipped 2 days. The SES talk about Mitsuru and Makoto behind their backs, how he's become withdrawn, and she's been single-handedly sorting the funeral and the family business. She could have paid people to do those things. She's rich. And then we skip ahead to the 9th of November 2009. Aegis is back at school, having been repaired, and Scarf-kun is the new transfer student named Ryuki Mochizuki. We get a quick scene of everyone in school talking about how the new kid is asking out all of the girls. And then after school, Makoto doesn't say a thing as Junpei invites Ryuki to karaoke, while Aegis calls Scarf-kun dangerous. Makoto interrupts a pervert and rips the guy's suit, but the guy is actually a creepy talent scout who then tries to recruit Makoto.
So he's actually a pervert.
I mean, just because you get to be a pervert for work doesn't mean you're not a pervert, dude. We skip to the 11th of November 2009, and Makoto is working part-time at a cafe to pay for the ripped suit. Ryuki walks in with 2 dates, and in no time at all is also working at the cafe. At the dorm, Mitsuru finally returns while everyone is talking about Makoto behind his back again. Takaba asks her to not skip the class trip. And that's the end of that scene. The next day, Ryuki convinces Makoto to go around school with him, doing odd jobs for a small fee as the Helpers Club. They make some money while Aegis Shinobi's around to keep an eye on them. At the hospital, Junpei is angry to hear Chidori being interrogated by Akihiko. Suddenly, Chidori is attacked by her persona. They give her some drugs, which make it better. And then back at the dorm, nobody's curious why Makoto says he needs money. But at least he says more than 2 words to his friends, who he's convinced that he doesn't need. After going to his room, Fuka knocks on the door. We skip from there to the school, where the Helpers Club excuses itself from helping the student council to go and prank Fuka's asshole friend. Fuka and her friend are friends again, so the Helpers Club goes to work at the cafe, and Ryuki says something that reminds Makoto of Pharos. At the hospital, Junpei tells Chidori that he's going on a class trip to Kyoto, and she reveals that she has healing powers. Later, Akihiko and Mitsuru discuss the shadows, Actually, she wants to discuss those. He just used that as an excuse to talk about the Clash trip. We skip all the way from there to the 19th of November 2009 and to Kyoto. After riding the train and coach, Makoto ditches to stand next to a river. Mitsuru also wanted some alone time, so interrupts Makoto's alone time. And then Takaba blunders in too.
What I like is that she was like, I want my alone time. She finds Makoto and she's like, but I was going to have alone time. It's like, it's almost like she's telling him to get out.
Yeah, just go further down the river. It's a big river. Makoto leaves and the ladies have a conversation which ends with Takaba slapping Mitsuru because she won't stop putting all of the blame on herself. Takaba explains that Fuka found the unedited video of her father, which had him saying to leave the shadows alone, not eliminate them, as Itsuki's edited version had said. That's why she wants to keep fighting to end the dark hour. But you just said your dad said not to do that.
She's going to fight some... Not to fight. Yeah.
The most powerful fighting is the fight we made along the way.
She's going to fight legally against the dark hour.
Mitsuru says she'll fight too, and then we cut to the inn, where they're checked in, and Junpei asks Ryuki where his old school had planned their class trip, but Scarfkun doesn't remember. After going to their rooms, Makoto dips again and winds up playing ping pong with Akihiko.
It's called table tennis.
It's called both things. Look it up. Makoto is told to fight for something worth defending, and then heads back to the room. He arrives just in time for Aegis to appear at the window and she asks Ryuki and Junpei to switch rooms with her via the window. This results in all four of them falling into the inn's decorative pond.
So much for Makoto's depth, huh?
Next day, we get a montage of SEEDs, minus Amada and Koromaru, exploring Kyoto before coming back to the boys in the hot spring. It's a shared bath, but at different times. And wouldn't you know it, the ladies of SEED enter the baths because it's their turn.
Wait, is it SEED now that they rebrand? Did I miss something?
I was about to ask the same thing. Oh. I was about to be like, is this because we're trying to bring back the shadows now?
I'm obviously getting a Gundam seed, like crosswired with this somewhere. I've written seed multiple times, oh dear.
Just replace the C's with a different acronym each time. Sorry, go on, Arthur.
It won't be noticeable that way. No, I was just thinking it's a little worrisome. He's thinking about seed during the hot spring scene.
You know, while Jump is tied up.
Well, hopefully that Paul is chlorinated.
Sorry, Ace, we're no longer allowed to. You can no longer watch this because of the Online Safety Act.
I'll say that again. It's a shared bath, but at different times. And wouldn't you know it, the ladies of
ladies of SEO? Ladies of CIA?
The ladies of SEES enter the baths because it's their turn. The boys manage to remain hidden thanks to a huge rock in the middle. They swim to the far side to escape, but Junpei loses his towel. Ryuki, however, has a genius idea, a tiny leaf from a bush. I laughed.
That tells us everything we need to know about Junpei.
They get caught, and we can only assume killed.
And that's the end of the anime! How do you like this anime?
The next day, their ghosts are still coming to terms with what was done to them.
They have unfinished business.
I mean, yeah, they have to kill death. We get another montage of Kyoto stuff, and then Junpei wants to buy Chidori a hairpin. But speaking of Chidori, the rest of Strega blows in the windows and hands her an axe and a gun and tells her to go with them. She hesitates, blaming Junpei for making her feel things, and then leaves.
Yeah, Junpei's really selfish, you know? You make her feel things.
He gave her the feels. The next day, they leave Kyoto, and Junpei heads straight for the hospital, finding only Chidori's sketchbook. At the dark hour, Fuka tries to find Chidori with her persona. Turns out she's at Tartarus, which should have been the first place anyone looked after finding the windows exploded inwards, to be fair. SEES heads over and Chidori attacks them. Junpei stops the others from attacking Chidori, and his persona defends against her persona's attacks. She tells him that she doesn't fear death, only attachment. She can deal with physical pain, but Junpei brought her a different kind of pain, the fear of their time together ending. He manages to reach her and embrace her, stopping her attacks. Junpei is then shot by Takeya. Chidori dissociates and explains to a bedridden Junpei that her persona powers are killing her, unlike the SES's powers, and she doesn't want to lose him, so she begins to glow. Everyone, except for Fuka and Amada, are fighting Takeya, and while Chidori manages to revive Junpei, Fuka realizes that Chidori, using her powers, uses her own life force. At least I think that's the conclusion she made. Chidori dies in Junpei's arms, and Takeya begins to gloat. Junpei summons his persona, but it's digivolved, and easily defeats the Strega persona that literally everyone else put together couldn't hurt. Makoto hallucinates Pharos, telling him that he doesn't need anyone, and argues out loud with the hallucination. They overpower the other Strega persona, so Takeya and Jin escape. The next day, Junpei receives Chidori's sketchpad from the hospital. The last drawing is of Junpei. We skip all the way to the 2nd of December 2009, when Makoto and Ryuki are listening to Makoto's MP3 player on a rooftop. I already explained what an MP3 player was when we did the first movie. Go listen to that.
On your MP3 player.
Ryuki's head starts to hurt, but we cut to Ikutsuki's office, where Mitsuru and Akihiko are talking about the former chairman's files. It transpired that Ikutsuki had helped to create Strega, but there was something else. But ignore that. It's the Dark Hour, and Ryuki is unaffected by it. Elsewhere, Aegis is woken from her Borg regeneration alcove to the sounds of a dial-up modem. She's remembering something from her forgotten past. We cut to the bridge where Aegis finds Ryuki, who claims to not know why the sky is green. Makoto is woken at the dorm by a voice, and suddenly has flashes of Aegis at the bridge. We finally return to Mitsuki and Akihiko, and she explains that Ikutsuki wasn't just babbling when he said that defeating the 12 Shadows would bring something else. At the bridge, Aegis reiterates that Ryuki is dangerous, and now she remembers why. Because they've met before. No, not at school. Back at the dorm, Mitsuki explains that the shadow of the 13th Arcana has been created to bring about the end of the world, and its name is... Death is what Aegis tells Ryuki that his true name is, and she sealed him away 10 years ago. Ryuki's head hurts, and suddenly he remembers who and what he is. Aegis attacks, but is unsuccessful, because Makoto arrives to find her on the ground, and Ryuki looks at him. And then the movie ends. So, was this a good adaptation?
Yes.
Probably. I mean, it depends on which one we're talking about, right? And also, and I don't think in any of the personas, they died in the sauna scene, so that was a little bit of a deviation.
From what I remember of Persona 3 Portable, yeah, it's the same story, so yeah. So is it a spooks up, scares down, or a boo?
For me, it was a spooks up. I had a lot of fun. I like the characters. The Persona series is growing on me. It's really fun. So, yeah.
And goes?
Yeah, it's good.
Spooks up.
Yeah, yes, spooks up. Yes, yes.
It spooks up from me as well. So does it deserve its Annie List score of 74%?
It's a bit low, but I also understand why, right? Because I really appreciate that this movie kind of deviates from the Persona narrative and it shows you more of the characters, which is why I think I enjoyed it so much. But also I can see how if you're kind of expecting more Persona, it feels, at least to me, a bit more disconnected from that, right? So I think that's why, but I feel it's quite low.
Well, according to Annie List, the first movie is 73%, the second is 74%, just like this one.
Surprisingly low, I'll say.
Yeah, but Like the first movie, it basically ignores the side characters. The second movie at least featured little bits with them in, like, cameos. But yeah, I did enjoy this, and I'm looking forward to next year when we do the next one. Or, you know, they might release another version of Persona 3, so we'll move up the timetable on that.
I was looking up what was my opinion on the last two parts, and apparently on the second one I gave a meh, and I have no idea what my problem with it was, but no, this one was definitely really good. I feel like the score could be a little bit higher, because I don't know. I don't think there is a lot to complain about. I was watching it and I felt like there's not going to be much to talk about because it's just genuinely good. It has nice pacing and dialogue and doesn't have anything bad or super weird to, like, laugh about.
All right, well, that brings us to the end. Thank you for joining me, Artur and Goz.
Thank you so much for having us, Goulishes.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to the Pals Anime Lounge, and better yet, thank you for subscribing wherever you found this episode. You can find more from us on GameGrin.com, finding us on social media, or listening to the Grincast podcast. And until next time, scream on.